You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Randall White. And this morning, we want to bring attention to a movement that's happening within public media. And that includes stations like this one, Cap Radio. Today is the launch of Public Media for All Day, a platform to bring attention to issues of diversity, equity, and inclusion, which play out in newsrooms and station management throughout the nation. It's not just who's hired, but who's promoted, what stories are covered, and the lens through which those stories are seen. We spoke yesterday with two people who helped found Public Media for All Day, including Ernesto Aguilar with the National Federation of Community Broadcasters and Sachi Kobayashi with Oregon Public Broadcasting. I began by asking Ernesto what inspired them to create this movement.
Public Media for All really came about from, I think, two tendencies that we were seeing. First and foremost, public media has faced a number of challenges, well-publicized scandals at organizations like WNYC, WAMU, WBEZ, and elsewhere that have reflected a cultural change that organizations are being forced to make by the fact that racial equity has become a mainstream conversation that I don't think the public media was really ready to contend with this year. You would think that that wouldn't be the case considering all that the country's experienced in 2020. However, public media has been slow to respond to the issues that many workers at these organizations have raised. Issues of staff being ignored, of harassment, of abuse by those in power, and of official unawareness of those issues, or just simply ignoring the fact that these issues were being brought to human resources offices. The second issue is the fact that, similar to the point that I made a moment ago, racial equity has become a mainstream conversation in the United States. Major commercial enterprises have gotten into the conversation around racial justice, and more of the public, listeners, viewers, and audiences online of public media and of all media organizations expect better of all of our organizations and expect us to do better in not just who represents us on the air, but also in recruitment, retention of board governance, and everywhere else in an organization. Really, there's a need for greater assessment of these organizations and how we as media can do better because our audiences now expect it.
Mm-hmm. Sachi, let's talk a little bit about the actual day. What actions are you hoping to see from people and from stations throughout the day today?
Yeah, so this is really, we're thinking of this more of an inauguration event than sort of a culmination. This is just the beginning. And we had originally thought of this day as a day for people of color who work in public media to call out sick and tired of the overwhelming whiteness. But it's actually really evolved, I think, in a beautiful way to be even more inclusive, which is wonderful because that's one of the things we're working on. And we now have a lot of ways for different people to participate. So, you know, in addition to the fact that we're hoping to provide support and community to people of color in this space, we're hoping to provide resources and inspire action communally for white allies. And we've also asked public media organizations to pledge to doing 10 of 11 DEI action items that are listed on our website. We've gotten several to sign up already. We hope to be talking about that more today in our webinar that we have later today. And we are also hoping that that inspires ongoing conversations that inspire even more public media organizations to commit to these DEI action items.
Well, Sachi, I want to dig in a little more to the makeup of the people that work at public broadcasting stations. What about those who feel like perhaps they're a token person of color on their team or in the workplace?
Yeah, that's actually, so prior to us founding Public Media for All, some of the people on the organizing committee for Public Media for All were working on creating community in this space. So I started a Facebook group for people of color in public media more than a year ago. to help those people who do maybe feel tokenized and alone connect with other people of public media and public in at other stations. And there's also a Slack channel that was started by Consuela Stewart, who has been working with us. And I think that's, you know, that is sort of the essence of the issue. A lot of stations are really small. There are definitely stations that only have one person of color. And so for those people, that's why we're building those communities.
Mm-hmm. Ernesto, one of the goals is also to give tools to white supporters of this movement. Talk a little bit about that.
As with any conversation, I think when anyone calls out an issue or brings to light an issue that could be perceived as a challenge to the status quo, everyone instinctually almost brings up, well, what do we do? Or what can we do? That's an important topic, but ... The points that Saatchi brings up are an effort by Public Media for All to help allies and organizations to find something actionable, to hold conversations in their organizations, to reach out to other organizations in their cities to support and to be more engaged, to do more to represent not just the voices in your organization, but how does your organization represent your community? And to do a little bit more of that and focus less on what the large issue may be, which is an important issue clearly, but try to break that larger issue down into actionable steps everyone can do to play a role. I think I speak for myself and certainly several of the other organizers that we believe that this culture is changing. We do believe that the country's culture is changing and more white allies want to be engaged in these conversations, but oftentimes they, like people of color, may feel disempowered. They're not exactly sure how they can participate and be good allies in this movement to change nonprofits and to change society. And so our effort is to try to ensure that those individuals have the resources and all individuals have resources to be better supporters and also to talk about and engage with their organizations a little bit more to move the needle in the direction of a more just public media.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, if I can piggyback off of that, you know, I think there's a handful of stations and organizations within public media who have been leading the way. They're already doing a lot of this work. There's a handful of stations and organizations that are probably never going to do this work. But we truly believe that the majority of stations and organizations want to do this, but maybe they haven't known where to begin. They haven't had the resources to get started. And they've maybe been thinking of it as a nice to have, not a have to have, and it keeps on getting put on the back burner. Mm-hmm. So this movement is really to give people the tools that they need to move this forward, make it a priority, and stick to it. Because frankly, as Ernesto said, like the conversations in our country are changing around this, and that's not an accident, and that's not just because of a few specific high-profile news incidences. That is because the country is becoming majority-minority. This country will be majority-minority in the next couple decades, and there's no way for public media to serve everyone in this country effectively unless we start to address that and create more diverse programming, have institutions that reflect the people we serve, and that's going to be essential for the industry moving forward. So the case I'd like to make is this is not a nice-to-have. This is a have-to-have for the future of public media.
Yeah, and Saatchi, I imagine a disproportionate number of white people sit in positions of power at these stations. So if DEI or diversity, equity, and inclusion is going to be successful, it has to be made at those levels.
Correct. Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. I think there was a Columbia Journalism Review article that just came out yesterday that stated that only 23% of people at public media organizations were people of color. So when only 23% of the people who work at public media are people of color and the country is majority minority, how can we possibly do a good job of serving them?
Why do you think that is? Why do you think that it's at only 23% when it comes to public media stations?
Well, I think, you know, this is something that people have been working on since the beginning of public media, and especially since the founding of the 1967 Broadcasting Act that founded the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. It's in the language of the Act. It's in the charter of the CPB that we're supposed to be serving underserved communities. And so people have been working on this for over 50 years. And I'm not sure I fully understand why we haven't made more progress. If I did, I might have a different job. But I do think if there was a moment to try to move this forward substantially, now is that moment. And you know, I hope that we start to think of this less as something that is strategic, as I said before, and more as something that is deeply foundational to who we are as people in public media, as individuals, and also the identity of our organizations. Mm. And as we do that sort of soul-searching work, I think that might make it harder to have these kinds of conversations, because the fact is this isn't rocket science. There are other industries and other areas. There are some nonprofits even within public media that have managed to become very diverse. Although it's not rocket scientist, it does require courageous conversations. And that requires having an open mindset, an abundant mindset that gives people the sort of resilience and fortitude that they need to have these courageous conversations. So yeah. We're hoping to provide people with those resources.
So I would add to what Saatchi said that there is a bit of a crisis of imagination in public media to some respect. As she points out, a lot of commercial for-profit enterprises have thought about diversity, equity, and inclusion, thought about recruitment, thought about retention, and are treating those as priorities. And public media, because it's been so focused on so many other issues over the years, hasn't given the attention that it needs to really recruit and retain and involve new board members, new journalists, new staffers, new managers, and the people who you think would better represent the organization. As well, I think at times there is a strange hesitancy in public media when it comes to talking about race. We can talk about the president and what he says. We can talk about abortion. We can talk about LGBTQIA rights. We can talk about all kinds of issues. But when you talk about race, suddenly it is treated as political and controversial. So if we don't start to get a little bit more warm with the idea that race is something that the country now understands is a mainstream discussion, and it's something that impacts so many homes all over the nation, and we as programming, we as membership development and other aspects of a public media organization need to understand the diversity of people's lives and perspectives and try to incorporate that a little bit more, I think we'll see a bit more change around how we recruit and how we involve and also how we grow our donor bases and our listenership.
Ernesto, you brought up something that I want to ask you about, and that is, how does the LGBTQ plus community fit into the diversity, equity, and inclusion goals of public media for All Day? Because I would imagine that there are members of the LGBTQ plus community that feel left out of the conversation and aren't represented in the positions of power, possibly to the same degree as people of color. But I don't see it represented on the website.
It is very, very good to see that the LGBTQIA community has been so active in public media. There are now journalism associations. There are fantastic leaders like Lewis Wallace and others who are really trying to lift up this voice quite a bit, and they have engaged with us as allies in this movement. Our focus has been on a particular area of diversity to some degree, but make no mistake that we certainly understand and embrace the fact that there is a larger movement afoot across the country to see that the wide variety of cultures, of ideas, of everything within all of us be represented more in public media, and that we start to embrace that in leadership, in content, and in recruitment and retention.
And that's Ernesto Aguilar with the National Federation of Community Broadcasters and Saatchi Kobayashi with Oregon Public Broadcasting. Again, we spoke yesterday with the two founders of Public Media for All Day. Now let's bring that concept home. How is everything that Ernesto and Saatchi just spoke about playing out at Cap Radio. To help answer those questions, we bring in June Reyna. He's Cap Radio's general manager and my boss, but I've been told that no questions related to this topic are off limits. So let's get to it. And first of all, nice to see you, June, even if it's over Zoom.
Yeah, good to see you, Randall.
For conversational purposes, I do want to point out that if you hear June or me using the initialism DEI, know that it stands for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. June, you signed up Cap Radio to take part in Public Media for All Day. How did you become familiar with it, and why did you feel it was a good fit for the station?
Well, I think being familiar with it was, it just came about organically. It was something that a lot of the staff had been talking about. And when I, first of all, I do want to echo what Sachi and Ernesto were talking about, that, you know, public media has, I think for the longest time, always struggled with diversity. So I've been in the industry 14 years, 13 years, and for as long as I can remember, diversity has always been a strategic goal in some shape or form, you know, whether it's expanding staff, it's expanding audience or our board composition. But in the past, we've always been willing to accept it as, just the way it is, you know, that the well isn't deep enough, that there aren't enough diverse candidates that apply for positions. And so it's almost become a self-fulfilling prophecy for us. But I think this year is very different. I think there's been some sort of a reckoning this year, and we're no longer willing to concede that the well isn't deep enough.
Yeah. Walk us through, June, if you can, what Cap Radio will do differently today, and I guess moving forward, right, as part of this movement.
Well, you know, in several meetings, I've said to our managers that we can't expect diversity to just walk in the door. It's something that we need to be proactive about. And it's something that we need to build, right? So, and, you know, to that end, you know, Cap Radio's evolved its hiring practices. We're trying to be much more inclusive in the way we hire new candidates. The board itself is much more receptive to the idea of diversity and equity. And we've brought on a professional coach, you know, to help the station through a lot of the DEI issues.
Describe what the board does. What I work here and I'm not even 100% sure. Yeah. What is the board? The board of directors? Yeah.
So, yes, the board of directors. So we had our board retreat a couple months ago. And for the first time, the board, you know, proactively tackled issues around diversity. In fact, they went through implicit bias training. That's never happened before. And so there is a commitment on the part of the board to really tackle these issues from a foundational standpoint. And Sachi referred to it earlier, that this is more than just a strategic issue, right? This needs to be foundational. This needs to be ingrained in the organization's DNA. And so, you know, going back to the staff, and I know you'll have Sarah on the air a little later, but we've formed a station affinity group for people of color. It's a place for them to feel safe and a place for healing and to feel empowered. But on the flip side of that is we're also in the process of forming a white caucus. So it's a place for white staff to be able to engage in these types of conversations. So it's all about, I guess it's all about building spaces where people feel safe to discuss issues like this.
Mm. And I do, I'll take this opportunity since you brought it up to bring in Sarah Mises-Tan. She's our race and equity reporter. Sarah, great to have you here. As
great
always,
to be here.
you're such a friend of insight. Sarah, you belonged to a group like this in Boston when you were working back in Massachusetts, right? Is that what you modeled the Cap Radio version after?
Yeah. You know, I think talking a little bit about like why I decided to create an affinity group at Cap Radio requires me to explain a little bit about my own background. I did used to work as a reporter at a kind of remote bureau station for a station in Massachusetts. And I was, as was mentioned earlier, I was the only person of color at that very small station. And I think I was the first person of color to ever have worked there. Mm. And so it was a pretty isolating experience, I would say, overall. There are a lot of things that happened to me that really shaped the way that I viewed race and racism and how journalism should address that. But I think that's a question later on. But for now, you know, I would say it was an extremely isolating experience. But the station did form, the larger station up in Boston did form an affinity group during my time there. And I found it to be a very supportive space. I would actually make it a priority to attend because I just found it so comforting to even have a group of people of color that I could speak with candidly about any issues that I was facing or questions that I had just around, you know, how station management was addressing diversity or, you know, is everyone else running up against this? Is this just a me problem?
Yeah. And you're hearing that from people here at the station too, that have become part of the affinity group?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think that it was really helpful to just have a safe space where people of color could speak with other people of color and compare notes, because otherwise I do feel that there are so few of us and we are so isolated, even if there is a person of color who sits next to us, you know, at the station. I think that like with COVID that happened with Cap Radio, like I again felt very isolated, and it was nice to just be able to connect with other people of color in a formal way. You know, we meet every other week, every other Friday morning, and to just check in with everyone and say, okay, like, hey, how's everybody feeling? Did anyone experience anything that you had questions about? Or maybe something happened to you and you have an idea about how maybe Cap Radio can better address it.
Do you talk about coverage at all? Like what stories were chosen, how the story was told, content issues, do those come up?
No, we don't really. This is really just emotional support. And just we talk really about how Cap Radio can become a better and more inclusive space for its current BIPOC employees.
June, you are a person of color and your job at Cap Radio is as high up the ladder as one can possibly climb at this station. But the management team as a whole at Cap Radio is disproportionately white and male, and as far as I know, entirely straight. So diversity is lacking on the leadership level. How does Cap Radio plan to address that?
So, yeah, that's true. One of the things I remember most about when I first got hired at Cap Radio was when I walked in the door, the person that met me was a person of color. So this was, you know, Carl Watanabe, who used to be our station manager. Right. He's retired. He retired several years ago. But that in and of itself, it created a warm and fuzzy feeling for me that I felt like, you know, there was somebody at the station who looked like me. And so I think, you know, when we talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion, I just feel like if we get the equity and inclusion parts right, then diversity would follow. You know, if you look at how it's been over the years, you know, when I got to Cap Radio, we were 45 employees. We're now 107. So, you know, as much as I think that DEI issues or DEI priorities need to be properly resourced, this is not a resource issue. If we've been able to grow at that rate, but not diversify the staff, then there's something foundationally wrong, right? And so you can't necessarily fix the problem by just hiring more people of color, right? You need to be able to fix it at its most foundational aspects or organizational aspects. And that's why we want to get the board involved. That's why I'm not interested in making token statements about, you know, how we are not a racist organization or anything like that. I think the value of this work is the work itself, you know, getting the job done at its very, at its most foundational and structural level.
I think this is a conversation that we could bring back on a regular basis on Insight, but I'm glad we had it today. Cap Radio's general manager, June Reyna, and Cap Radio's race and equity reporter, Sarah Mises-Tan, talking about public media for all day. Thank you both so much for being here.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Randall.
And still ahead, we consider the historic significance of Kamala Harris as vice president with thoughts from LA Times columnist Erica Smith. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Randall White, and we're back in just a moment. ¶¶